For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. At least 9 people are injured and 1 suspect is dead after an attack at a university in the U.S. state of Ohio. Authorities say the attacker hit pedestrians with his vehicle, then exited the car and began stabbing bystanders with a large knife. The suspect was shot and killed by a campus police officer. The attack took place at Ohio State University, which has over 60,000 students. A motive for the attack is not yet known. The U.S. president-elect has threatened to undo the recent warming of diplomatic relations between the U.S. and Cuba. Just days after the death of former Cuban leader Fidel Castro, Donald Trump took to social media to put the future of the deal into doubt. Kevin McAleese reports from Washington.
Tweeting Monday, Trump wrote, "If Cuba is unwilling to make a better deal for the Cuban people, the Cuban-American people, and the U.S. as a whole, I will terminate deal." Donald Trump's latest online post plunged ties between the two nations into further uncertainty after the billionaire businessman repeatedly criticized the normalization of ties during his election campaign. Relations between the two were restored under President Obama following more than 5 decades of Cold War tensions. Speaking to Fox News over the weekend, Trump's chief of staff, Reince Priebus, said the future of a deal between Washington and Havana hinged on issues including human rights, open markets, freedom of religion, and political prisoners. Kevin McAleese, Washington.
South Africa's President Jacob Zuma is facing yet another vote of no confidence. Mr. Zuma has survived a similar vote before, but critics, including some of his ministers, want him out of office. Here's our Africa correspondent, Julius Mugambwa.
President Jacob Zuma's stay in office remains under scrutiny, with a renewed demand for him to resign. Reports indicate Zuma faces a vote of no confidence from his own party, the African National Congress, the ANC. According to some sections of South African media, critics pushing for Zuma's removal include senior officials of the party and some of his cabinet ministers. Some reports say that recent meetings have witnessed a divided ruling ANC over the matter. Analysts say that while the South African leader enjoys some strong support of the ANC's executive, recent revelations have shown growing dissatisfaction from within the party. Zuma's presidency is no stranger to criticism, especially from the opposition, who have in the past accused him of abuse of power and corruption.
For more on the day's top stories, you can follow us on Twitter at Feature Story. You can also check out our video reports on Facebook. We're there at facebook.com/featurestorynews. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks, Rebecca, and a warm welcome to you. I hope you're warm. It's going to be a cold old Monday night in the northwest of England, so we're told anyway. Temperature is going to drop to -4, -5 a bit later on. Dreading it. And sparing a thought as well, sincerely, for those who don't have a roof over their heads. Look, I hope you've had a good weekend wherever you are and whomever you are. Thanks for tuning into the Richie Allen Show for Monday, November 27th, 2016.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, Brandon Smith is the co-founder of neithercore.us, and he's also the founder and chief strategist behind the Alternative Market Project. Brandon's been writing about the possibility that Donald Trump was elected to serve as a scapegoat for a coming massive financial crash, huge financial crisis. Trump's going to be blamed for it. Conservatives will be blamed for it, says Brandon, who's a libertarian. Now, the crash, he says, has been planned since the most recent crash of 2008. Don't miss that this hour. And coming up in the second hour, Sandra Fecht returns to this program. This is massive. Talked a lot about this on the Sunday Review program yesterday. Sandra's a licensed licensed therapist even in Canada, who began to hear shocking stories of ritual satanic abuse from her own patients. Never expected that at all. So many of these stories coming with so many similarities. Sandra went public with the accounts and came on this program around 18 months ago to talk about the things she'd been hearing. She's been back since then again. Now, the UK media has gone into overdrive in the last few days in claiming that ritual satanic abuse is a fantasy, and has even blamed therapists for implanting fake memories in their patients. I mentioned yesterday Dr. Rachel Hoskins has been very critical of the wheelchair police, who are looking into the allegations about former Prime Minister Edward Heath. Hoskins says that these stories are fantasies, they are fake memories. And she's had a pop at the psychoanalysts, the psychotherapists, counsellors and psychologists who have reported their patients talking about satanic abuse. This is huge. Of course it's huge. And we'll get into it in hour two. Now, Sandra said she might very well have a patient of hers who has unfortunately been a victim of satanic ritualistic sexual abuse, and might very well have somebody who's going to join in that in hour two. So we'll put the questions to Sandra. Now, look, I'm not going to try and claim that I'll be the devil's advocate, no pun intended. I won't be, because I believe that satanic ritualistic abuse is widespread. But we'll ask Sandra, what about these other clinicians like Rachel Hoskins, who say that it's fantasy and that the therapists are either knowingly or unknowingly planting these memories or eliciting false memories from patients. This is huge. We're live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, alternatecurrentradio.com and davidicke.com as well. Check out davidicke.com/headlines, where there is an absolute abundance of information that you won't find anywhere else. It's 7 minutes past the hour. Good old weekend. Thanks for those of you who tuned in at the last minute on Saturday evening when I threw together an impromptu two-hour music show, The Music of the Awakening. I had great fun doing it. I was in the house by myself. The studio was only a short walk away, and I thought, yeah, go on then. I was going to play some music anyway. Threw a message on social media, expected to be talking to nobody, and was pleasantly surprised that it gathered a bit of momentum. So thanks to those of you who were listening to that. I did record it, so when I get the time, maybe later on, maybe tomorrow, I'll throw it on to podcast for you there. Now, today is the Monday, so it's the beginning of a brand new week, meaning that we'll have a brand new meditation from Kim Hutchison from livingasyoursoul.com. What a success that's been, putting those meditations on every Monday, and of course we replay them on Thursday. Now, tonight's is a Channels of Illumination meditation entitled Moving Beyond Judgment into the Healing Power of Your Love Pattern of Reality, the great Kim Hutchison. That follows me at the end of this programme. Now, mentioned this at length yesterday on the Sunday Review show. The former football coach at the centre of a child sex abuse scandal, Barry Bunnell, has been admitted to hospital. Police officers attended an address in Nebworth Park, Stevenage, just before 11 o'clock Friday night in connection with fear for a welfare incident. That's according to Thames Valley Police. But nobody knew anything about it until today. Mentioned today, late this afternoon, in fact, by Sky and the BBC. A 62-year-old man was located, was taken to hospital in order to receive medical treatment. That's where he remains. East of England Ambulance Trust said the man was unconscious when paramedics reached him. As you know by now, Bunnell is a convicted paedophile who has recently been back in the spotlight after former players said he sexually abused them as youngsters. The scandal is expanding, with the Football Association launching an inquiry into the allegations, and the PFA, the Professional Footballers Association, also said that more than 20 players have come forward to seek help over the abuse. Now, I mentioned yesterday on Sunday View that if Bunnell was procuring young boys for a paedophile ring, then, and if Bunnell had information on people, I wouldn't be surprised if he became ill or if something happened to him. Now, one or two scallywags on social media have been pointing out that my predictions of late haven't been the most accurate. Scallywags. But then again, I've never hidden from that. I suppose a broken clock can be right twice a day. But then again, maybe I'm not right. Maybe this is pretty innocent. Maybe knowing the avalanche of publicity that was coming his way, maybe Bunnell tried to harm himself. We don't know. There will be those in the independent media who will jump the shark and start telling lies and saying that he was targeted. We have no idea. He might well have been. And like I said yesterday, if he knows something or knows others involved in paedophilia, and he might do, because other players have come out today. David Lean came out today. He's spoken to Sky News, David Lean, and said that there are potentially hundreds of victims. Potentially hundreds. Now, he's a former Preston North End reserve team player. In fact, one of the recent convictions of Barry Bunnell was based largely on evidence given by David Lean, the former Preston North End reserve team player. But Lean told Sky News today that there might be hundreds of victims. So if it is the case that Bunnell knew something, he's going to be targeted. You know, like I said yesterday, if he's a lone operator, well, you don't know. We'll tell you more on that when we have it. Right now, they're not saying very much. And I'll tell you what's interesting about that is that Sky News roving reporter Enda Brady, Dublin man, was outside the hospital where Bunnell is currently being treated. And he said, did Brady, that as a reporter, it's unprecedented for the hospital not to tell them anything, not to confirm the name of the man, what's wrong with him, what his condition is. They're not telling them a dicky bird. And Brady said, I've never known that, regardless of how high profile a case might be. But he did go on to say that Barry Bunnell has about 15 different aliases. 15. We said yesterday, again, not doing that crappy alternative media nonsense of just making stuff up. We said, we don't know what's going on, but with all of these people coming forward, this has got a whiff of Savile about it. And we know what Jimmy Savile was doing. He was procuring children for paedophiles through Oita na gCoireann and elsewhere, at hospitals and elsewhere. We know all that. Leave Barry Bunnell for a minute. Maybe Sandra Fecht might have a comment on that later on. Maybe she won't. Maybe she won't know too much about that particular case. You might have heard today, it's big news here in the UK, that the British government, the UK government, is facing a legal battle over whether, you're going to yawn and you're going to roll your eyes, but this is serious. A legal battle over whether the United Kingdom stays inside the single market after it has left the EU. Lawyers from a think tank have been saying that uncertainty over the UK's European Economic Area membership means ministers could be stopped from taking Britain out of the single market. Now, I'm not going to dwell again on what I told you, on what I told you yesterday, but we played you audio yesterday of every government minister, every opposition minister, every pro-leaving the EU, every pro-staying in the EU man and woman who all said very clearly leaving the European Union would mean leaving the single market. But they don't want to leave the European Union. You and I both know that. I'm not going to labour the point there. Now, the British Prime Minister, Theresa May, went to great lengths today to give assurances to EU citizens who have moved to the UK, set up home and got a job and living their lives here, that they would be okay, that situation would continue. Now, you might remember I wrote a jokey but serious open letter to Theresa May and to Jeremy Corbyn and to everybody else about how simple it should be for Britain to leave the European Union and negotiate an exit with the EU. One of the things I pointed out, 2.3 million British citizens living in the European Union, 2.4 million EU citizens living in the UK. It couldn't be any simpler. We're leaving, let's leave these people alone, and you leave our people alone. They're paying taxes in your European countries. Your citizens are paying taxes here. Happy days, everybody wins. Simple as that. Okay. So she's been saying that today. Back to the single market nonsense. The pro-single market think tank British Influence is behind this legal challenge to the government's position. Well, it's not a legal challenge. They've said they want a judicial review of the government's position, and the government says its position is that the UK must leave the single market. They're going to do everything they can to prevent this. I played you audio yesterday from Irish Taoiseach Enda Kenny, from everybody and anybody who says this is going to take a long time. And of course, at the end of that long time, somebody will propose a new referendum. Hey, let's have a new referendum. Why not? It's been a long time, you know. I'm not going to labour that point. Got into that yesterday. Well, good news for Bashar al-Assad's government. Today, his government forces have captured more than a third of rebel-held territory in eastern Aleppo. This is good news for his government and his supporters. The advance after heavy bombing from the air is a major blow for the armed opponents of his government. The BBC hilariously calling terrorists armed opponents. BBC just say it. It's an easy word to say, even for somebody who English isn't their first language. Terrorists. It's easy. They're not armed opponents. They are terrorists attacking and destroying Syria. Call them what they are. So Syrian state television said government troops were dismantling mines and explosives and continuing their advance. Needless to say, this hasn't gone down very well. So shortly after this was announced, that the Syrian government, with the help of the Russian Air Force, is doing well and getting ISIS out of Aleppo. Well, General Rupert Jones, what a name. General Rupert Jones, well, he surfaced and he turned up on Sky News. What did he say? He said, a large trove of documents seized in Syria from Islamic State revealed that thousands of plots to attack Europe and other parts of the world have been planned. Now, Rupert Jones is Britain's top commander in the region. So he should be in prison. He should be in prison. He's committing war crimes just by being there. Unwanted, unlicensed, uninvited inside a sovereign country. But this bastard Jones is saying, we seized 10,000 documents and you're all going to die. He didn't say that, but he might as well have said that. Thousands of attacks in Europe and other parts of the world. Fair play to one member of the press. They said, what specific points were made in the documents? And he declined to discuss details. It's a wonderful world we live in. We found all these documents. ISIS are going to try and kill everybody. Any chance we get it? No, you can't. Take your word for it. Am I naive? Am I saying that militant Wahhabi lunatic Saudi trained nutters wouldn't like to get into Britain and France and Spain and do stuff? No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm not naive, but I'm saying this is scare, fear porn, and the timing of it couldn't be better. He went on to say, now let me just have a look there. Now it's important to get this right. Let me say this. He went on to say, Rupert Jones, what an arsehole. If we want to keep Britain safe, we need to deal with Daesh, he said. You see, and we had a discussion today on Sky and the BBC about dropping aid packages into parts of Syria where Syrians are desperate and they have no food and they have no water. All of this coming out as the Syrians and the Russians are driving ISIS out. The next step, of course, is no-fly zone. The next step, of course, is troops in on the ground. Extraordinary stuff going on right under our noses. Murderers, criminals, warmongers. General Rupert Jones. 19 minutes past the hour. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave it for now. I'm going to take a wee break. When we come back, I'll be talking with Brandon Smith. You don't want to miss that. And coming up in the programme a bit later on, Sandra Fecht, the terrific counsellor therapist, joins us from Canada to answer directly the claims made by Dr. Rachel Hoskins that victims of satanic abuse are fantasising about it, and that clinicians, psychologists and therapists are either knowingly or unknowingly eliciting fake memories from their patients. Serious stuff this, back in a minute.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Join in tonight's discussion by tweeting at Richie Allen Show now.
And of course, you can email me. The email is working better. It's richie@richieallen.co.uk. It's Monday, November 27, 2016. Lovely to be with you as always. A lot of great guests coming up on this week's programme. First up is Brandon Smith this Monday. He joins us after this from Take That. My name is Richie Allen. You're listening on Alternate Current Radio, Fab Radio 2, DavidIke.com and the TuneIn app. Back after Take That. To stay from Take That on your Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Many of you expressing amusement, frustration and downright anger on Twitter about the BBC's labelling of ISIS, let's be honest about it, as armed opponents of the Assad government. Far from it. Keep the tweets coming in at Richie Allen Show. We've had a lot of tweets thus far. Do go to, when you're in Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, press enter, and you'll be able to see what other people are saying, and you can argue with them. nicely. You can theorise, realise, polarise, criticise, whatever. Looking forward to chatting with our first guest. He's not been on the programme before. Well, the fallout from the election of Donald J. Trump as the next president of the United States continues. Now, our next guest is a co-founder of NeitherCore.us and the founder and chief strategist behind the Alternative Market Project. The website is www.alt-market.com. He's been successfully accurately predicting geopolitical and economic events. His articles on the alt-market.com website are very, very interesting. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the program, one of the things he's considering and he's talking about is whether or not Trump was put in and elected to serve as a scapegoat for a coming massive financial crash, a crash that has been planned since the crisis of 2008. Delighted to welcome to the program Brandon Smith, who's in Montana. Brandon, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hi, Richie. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's great to have you on the show. Exciting times in Montana, I suppose, where Trump got a large and sizable proportion of the vote, didn't he, Brandon?
Oh, absolutely. Montana's Republican all the way.
Republican to the bone, yeah. We used to have an old saying in Ireland that, our major parties are Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. We used to say if they got a pig and they put a Fianna Fáil jacket on him in certain places, the pig would be voted. Yeah, it's real Republican territory. I love the article that, I'm going to tweet it out while we're chatting, Order Out of Chaos, The Defeat of the Left Comes with a Cost. You're considering the possibility that this guy might have been parachuted in there. And to be fair to your article, you're not dogmatic about it. You're considering these possibilities and you're putting them out there. This guy might have been put in there to be a scapegoat for a coming massive financial crash. Why do you think that?
Well, all of my predictions for the past few years that have come true, and I'd say about 90 to 95% of them have come true, have been based on, first, the premise that the global bankers or global elites have been engineering a financial crisis, a major financial crisis, since at least 2008. The second premise that I've been basing these predictions on is the idea that once this crash occurs, the global bankers are not going to want to take responsibility for it. So they're going to need a scapegoat. And I successfully predicted the Brexit based on this premise, and I successfully predicted Donald Trump becoming president based on this premise. I believe that the global elites are about to crash the economy and that they need a scapegoat to do it. And the scapegoat will be conservative movements in general, not just Donald Trump or the leaders of the Brexit, but through them, conservative movements in general.
And like libertarian movements like the Tea Party and others. You think they're going to be blamed for it, right?
Exactly. Or even wider conservative movements. Now we're being called the alt-right. I don't really even know what that means. That's the first I ever heard the term was during the elections. For the longest time, we've been called, at least in America, we've called ourselves the Liberty Movement. Now they're starting to label us. They're trying to label us what they want to label us, either populists, nationalists, or the alt-right. They never really call us what we've been calling ourselves, which is the Liberty Movement, I suppose, because that label has more positive connotations.
Brandon, just before we talk about why you think the money men and women, why they want to blame the Liberty Movement specifically, let's talk about the crash, because many of our listeners, their ears really perk up when we talk finance and economics. People are terrified about it. You know that on programs like this, we talk about bail-ins all the time. We've seen bail-ins. We've seen them in Cyprus and other countries. People are terrified about their money and what's going to happen to it. When you talk about a crash, how severe do you think this crash is likely to be? Are we talking total, or are we talking something slightly worse than what we saw in 2008?
I think we're looking at something relatively worse than the Great Depression on a global scale. I don't think we're going to hit Mad Max levels of of disaster, but I do think that it will be worse than the Great Depression. And especially in the United States, I think that the global bankers, the international financiers are targeting the United States in particular because we are, you know, at least conservative movements in the United States are a serious threat to their end game, which is a one world currency, one world economic management, and eventually a one world government.
Why do you think conservative movements are a threat to this? And I agree with your summarization of what the end game would look like. I think you've done a very good job of describing it. That's exactly what I believe they want. But they've always controlled both sides of the game, Brandon, and they've conveniently blamed liberals, they've conveniently blamed progressives, socialists, conservatives over the years. These people couldn't care less whether you're a conservative or a Democrat. Isn't one of the problems that we identify as these labels that they've given us to identify with, conservative or liberal? They play both sides of the game anyway, don't they? It doesn't matter.
Absolutely, and keep in mind when I say conservatives, I'm talking about grassroots conservatives, regular people, you and me, people who just want either limited government or government completely out of the picture. Some people want that. I'm more of just a small government guy. Yeah, I'm talking about regular people, not the people at the top of the pyramid that don't have any political ideology as far as that spectrum. They're elitists. They have their own separate ideology altogether.
Yeah, that's good. It's a good way of putting it, because one of the things I've been discussing on the program in the last few days, and fair play to you, you alluded to it in your articles that, you know, a lot of what has been labelled as the alt-right, and like you, I only heard that term very recently, and it doesn't really mean anything to me, but a lot of what was labelled alt-right or, you know, I don't know, libertarian, went for Trump in a big way. And I felt, and it's just my opinion, and that's the beauty of this program, we get different opinions, was that we, when I say we, they kind of got suckered into falling for this self-identifying as, you know, white conservative American, and they bought into what Trump was selling. And within days of Trump winning the presidency and becoming president-elect, again, to be fair to you, as you point out in your article, he's already given the impression, isn't he, Brandon, that he's going to flip-flop or backtrack on much of what he's already said he would do?
Yes, so far, yes. And I've tried to give Trump the benefit of the doubt, especially before the election, just because it, you know, it's certainly a large part of the liberty, what I call the liberty movement. They have a lot of hope in this idea that a white knight is going to ride to our rescue, save the country, that we could back this guy, and he's gonna rout out all the he's gonna drain the swamp, as he said. So far, it doesn't look like he's gonna be draining the swamp at all. He's only adding more creatures to the swamp.
Isn't that right, Brandon? And can I ask you a question? And I mean, I've been reading a lot about you today in the run-up to this, and you're a good writer. I know that, you know, I mean, you're a very good writer considering, at least I don't think anyway, that you've had any training in it, that you've not worked for any publication, but it's very good, and I like it. But I get the impression, and we've had arguments, I mean, I have conservative stroke, you know, right-wing commentators on this programme all the time, and they're, to use a great English colloquialism, they're gutted now, gutted at what Trump is doing. But I'm a guy, Brandon, I don't advocate anarchy, but I'm a guy who believes that we'll never, ever vote our way out of the paradigm. There isn't a man or woman alive, however wonderful and decent they are, that can change things within that system. For me, the system itself has to go. Do you think if Trump, just to give you an idea, Paul Craig Roberts said to me on this program 2 weeks ago, poll said, I tell you what, Richie, if this guy Trump turns out to be another oligarch-serving system, you know, system dream, basically, or dream for the elite, there's going to be violence and bloodshed in America. Do you see that, Brandon? Do you think that if this guy lets people down, that it might be the straw that breaks the camel's back?
Yes, I don't know that it will work out in that simple a fashion. I don't think that Trump will be in long enough for conservatives to get to the point of revolution against Trump. I think he'll be in long enough, but I think the bankers will crash the system pretty quickly after he gets into office. I'm predicting that crash will at least be initiated, or it will begin within 6 months after he's inaugurated. So I think the public in general will be so overwhelmed by an economic crisis that they won't have time to think about what Trump is doing or isn't doing, or what promises he's keeping or not keeping. And I also think at that point he'll be able to blame the economic crash for any inconsistencies that he's had since his election.
Here's a question for you, Brandon. This is very interesting stuff. I mean, you remember Paulson back in 2008 saying that there wouldn't be any money in the ATM machines for people, and that caused huge panic. And if this is a worse crash than what we experienced in 2008, that will also lay the path to war in the Middle East, won't it? Because that's what happens, isn't it? Whenever you have a crash, historically, annihilate the money system, bring about a massive crash, war. Not long after 2008, okay, a couple of years, we had Libya, didn't we? We now have Syria. Do you see that in the future?
I see regional wars as definitely as a possibility. I do not, like some commentators and analysts, I do not see World War or World War III as a potential, at least not at this stage. From what I'm seeing, the evidence that I'm seeing, that's not what the elites want. I don't think they want – they certainly don't want a nuclear war. I think they want the Earth nice and pristine for themselves. And I'm operating on the theory or the thesis that they're going to use economics and economic crisis as their primary weapon to affect vast socio-political change over a short period of time, and to reduce population, which is another one of their agendas.
You see, this is why I'm glad you're on, because there's inherent contradictions in what you just said there. And of course, everything, I suppose, ultimately is a mass of contradictions and opinions. But again, we agree on the global depopulation agenda. But you said there that you don't think that they want a massive conflict that might turn nuclear. I would say that I can't prove that they do, Brandon, but to me, all the evidence suggests that they do. I mean, the military build-up in the Black Sea, NATO's encroachment on Russia, China, and all of that. To me, it looks like poke, 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 you know, harass, harass, harass. They're doing everything to provoke a global conflict.
Well, I certainly could be wrong, but from my perspective, and I'm coming from a more economic perspective than a military perspective, but from my perspective, an economic war is what they're actually seeking here. An economic war between East and West, which will eventually result in one of their primary goals, which is the financial destruction of the United States and the removal of the dollar as the world reserve currency. And keep in mind, yes, they control the dollar. They control most central banks around the world. They control. The issue here, though, is to create a rationale or a narrative for why the dollar was killed, right? They can't just go out and say, okay, we're dropping the dollar as world reserve, we're killing the dollar, because then the bankers get the blame for it. What they need is for people 100 years from now to say, oh, you see what happened? The United States, they were aggressive. They were poking at the East. They were poking at Russia, poking at China. Finally, the East started dumping the dollar as world reserve. Finally, Saudi Arabia dumped the dollar as world reserve. And hey, the Americans had it coming. This is what happens when you have nationalists in charge. That's the real goal here, is to blame, is to kill the dollar, bring down, for the most part, the U.S., and blame nationalists, blame so-called populists in the process. Their goal, their end game, is to destroy the philosophy of small government sovereignty, the conservative ideal. Their goal is to destroy that, so that in the future people will see socialism and global governance as the only potential. That's the only place where we can have a peaceful resolution.
And this is very important, and you're right. Now, I would argue with you and say that that socialism that you say they want, for me, it's more of a cultural Marxism. Would you agree with that? Because I would describe myself, Brandon, and you might not like this, but I would describe myself as a genuine socialist in the true definition, the true meaning of the term. But not a cultural Marxist. Cultural Marxism and socialism are two different things. Would you agree?
Sure, sure. I think the I'm not familiar with the details of your personal position. In general, from what I've seen of socialism under the control of global elites, the results are never very good.
We've never had it, though, Brandon. We've never had it. It's never been allowed grow. We saw what happened to Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Anybody who's ever tried to kick out the corporations, nationalize state assets, you know, take them away from mega corporations and have them under public ownership, which I believe passionately should be the case. These people are attacked, whether it's through intelligence agencies, whether it's through fake revolutions in their own countries. So I know you'll argue with me about this, Brandon, but it's never been given a chance. And I'm not talking about, you know, these silly ideas of communism where we all share a car and all this nonsense. I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about, like you, a limited government. Not no government, but a limited government, a fair government. A government not funded by corporations and private interests, but a government that works for and on behalf of the people, which again, we don't have. We don't have it here. We don't have it in the United States. But I would just argue that we've never seen socialism, you know, have a right good go. You might laugh at this, and I know you'll disagree with this, and I'll let you back in, and you can have the floor. But look what happened in Cuba. Look what happened in Cuba for nearly 50 years after when this guy was able to hold off imperial forces. Now, I know you'll say he wasn't an angel, and this and that, but education, health in Cuba, you know, money, wealth for everybody. Given a chance, Brandon, what do you say?
Well, I understand that. I definitely understand that position, because in the U.S., liberty movement analysts like myself, we hear the argument from a lot of people that it's capitalism and free markets that are the cause of all our problems. And I consistently argue with those people that actually real free markets have not had a chance in over a century, which is so for people to blame free markets, it's not practical. They've never lived under a free market. So true. It's kind of the same argument that you're bringing up in terms of true socialism. My only concern is that as long as everything stays voluntary, I'm fine. If a group of people voluntarily want to be in a socialist system, that's absolutely fine with me, as long as everything stays voluntary.
This is fair enough, right? I'm going to give you that. And I'm going to give you that we've not lived under, you know, real free market capitalism. I'll give you that. But I would ask you this. Under a pure socialism model, the least in society would be looked after. Now, Brandon, I'm not saying that people can't work hard and save their money and if they're willing to put the graft in and if they have a brain and if they have an entrepreneurial spirit, that they can't have a big house and I'm not saying let people do whatever they want, but I think in my model, the least of us in society are guaranteed to be looked after. Can you guarantee that the worst off in society, those that can't fend for themselves, the disabled and the sick, under free market capitalism, are they going to be looked after if everything is privatized?
No, absolutely not. I can't guarantee that. I will say, though, that in general, you will find that in a true free market ideal, people who support it, they tend to be more charity oriented than people in a that I've seen in a socialist system. So they'll volunteer aid to the worst off. Whereas in a socialist system, the government just takes a certain, you know, percentage of your production or your earnings, and then they give that to the worst off.
Yeah.
So again, it's all about, you know, being voluntary. In a socialist system, if that group of people prefers to have the government handle the charity, that's absolutely fine. In my ideal, I would prefer that people just do it. They do it directly instead of using government as a middleman.
Fair enough. I tell you what, Brandon, I'm not patronizing you. You know, you sound like a nice guy, and I think you'd probably do that. But we're really kind of we're really depending on, and maybe an overinflated view of human nature, you know, to think that all people will just do it. But look, I'm not knocking that. You might be right. That's what the show is all about. It's about exchanging different opinions. I'm going to plug your website again, and then I'm going to read you some tweets, because you won't be surprised to learn we've had lots of tweets on that. You can find Brandon, you can read him at alt-market.com, alt-market.com. Claire has already tweeted the article, Order Out of Chaos. A very good article, very thought-provoking. A good lengthy, good meaty article there to get stuck into. We've tweeted that. Let me read some tweets for you. There'll be a lot of socialist listeners, Brandon, but they'll be kind.
Okay.
Many of them agree with you. Jane says, nationalism where people come together is the biggest threat to these parasites, hence the immigration agenda, says Jane. So she agrees with you as well. D tweets, Richie, out of the financial crisis comes order, as Brandon has been saying, but not this time round. So many people are wising up to it. It's not going to work. Now, we'll come back to Brandon on that in a minute. Is this crash going to work, and what can people do about it? Justin tweets, what are Brandon's thoughts on removing the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England? It's all fiat currency anyway. We might come back to that. Really enjoying this conversation. Hi to Hubertes and to Gail. Colm as well. T is for Tsipras. T is for Trump. Watch the fools realise T is also for Trojan horse. The system, well, I called it, he said. Well, this particular program was the first program, I reckon, in the world before Tsipras even took office in Greece to say exactly what was going to happen there. Faisal tweets, there's already violence and bloodshed in America, and I think it will hot up quicker with Trump's flip-flops. La Antenna tweets, but, all right, that's an answer to another tweet. So what about the Fed then and the Bank of England? Because you won't be surprised again, Brandon, to learn that I believe that the banks should be owned by the people, and that any money that needs to be allocated to road building or house building, social house building or whatever it is, that money should be issued but debt free. Now, I'm not talking about quantitative easing, just throwing money, but I'm talking about spending money on projects that are good for everybody, whether you're wealthy or poor, but projects that will also encourage employment. So what do you think of the Fed and the Bank of England? They're tyrannies, right?
Absolutely. The death of, I mean, at least in the United States, the death of free markets occurred around 1913 to 1916 with the establishment of the Federal Reserve. You can't have economic freedom with a central bank controlling the money supply and interest rates. You just can't. There's no such thing. So they need to be removed completely. There's no use for them. The only use for a central bank is to control geopolitics in any given nation, and that's what they were established for. If anyone has some skepticism on that, I suggest they read a book called Tragedy and Hope by a man named Carol Quigley. He's a professor and the mentor to Bill Clinton and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations.
That's right. I didn't read that book, would you believe it, Brandon, but I know very well who he is, Quigley, yeah. Yeah, fascinating stuff. Look, there's loads of comments coming in on this, loads and loads. Here's a question. This is a cheeky question. This is designed to provoke an argument, Brandon. Do you believe that things like water and transport should be nationalised or should be in the hands of everybody?
I think they should be localised. I think that the local communities should be in charge of their own resources and infrastructure. And this would aid in economic, what I call economic redundancy, which means if there is if localized systems, if each community is in charge of its own resources, their own allocation and infrastructure, then it's much harder for a national crisis to occur. Under a centralized system with very few hands in charge, there's much more likely to have a national crisis.
That's a good answer. I like it. You're not so much of the conservative maybe that you think you are. I think you're more moderate. You might not like me for saying that. Very quick question, and I'll ask you to answer this quickly, and then I want to talk to you again about the coming crash and what you think people can do about it. Look, one of my big fears about free market capitalism is, you're not going to argue with me, Brandon, corporations are psychotic. They externalize everything. They externalize all their costs to the detriment of the environment and to the detriment of people. They're bastards, right? You know, shareholders, one year they make $5 million a year. That's good money, Brandon. Next year they earn $4 million and they say, oh, we've got to let 600 people go. This is my problem, you see, that unregulating, completely deregulating all these people and then expecting them to behave themselves. Explain to me why I'm wrong, and then I want to ask you about this crash. Go ahead.
Well, I definitely agree with you on corporations, and right now I would say we don't live in a free market system. We live in a corporatocracy. That's what we live in today, at least in the United States. I'd say most of the West. The issue is that corporations were never intended to be part of a free market system. In fact, corporations can only exist because of government. Government created the charter, which allows corporations limited liability, and government tends to protect corporations from litigation, as in, you know, the Monsanto Protection Act that Obama aided in recently. So without government and without the charter for corporations, corporations could not exist. You could have limited partnerships, but they wouldn't have the legal protections from government that corporations have today. So I think you could have a free market system. In a true free market system, corporations couldn't survive. There would be too much competition.
This is good stuff. Right, in the 4 minutes we have left, how can people recognize the signs of the coming crash that you're predicting for around about early to midsummer next year? What are the signs of it going to be, Brandon? And more importantly, what can the average man or woman who might have 10 grand, 5 grand, 15 grand in savings accounts and savings bonds, what can they do about it before they're told, you know, I'm sorry, but we're going to have a bail-in. We need more austerity. What can people do about it? How do they recognize it and what do they do about it?
Well, as far as the signs of a crash, I would keep an eye first on oil markets. I believe at least for now, oil markets are tied heavily to stock markets, and the movements in oil are going to produce similar movements in stocks. So if you see oil dropping below $40 into the, you know, $30 per barrel mark or below that, I would expect that stocks will follow suit, that they will follow oil down. I would also keep an eye on the behavior of countries such as Saudi Arabia and China towards U.S. debt purchases. For now, it would seem that Russia and China are dumping U.S. treasuries at historic highs. So it's hard to say at what point that would become a crisis, because it's just never happened before. But I would keep an eye on that. I would keep an eye on Saudi Arabia and their behavior towards the U.S. If they dump the dollar as the petrocurrency standard, then a lot of other OPEC nations will follow them in that action, and you would see the loss of the dollar's world reserve status, which if you live in anywhere outside the U.S., you may think that doesn't matter. But with the dollar being the world reserve currency, anything that affects the dollar negatively will affect most Western nations negatively. It will create chaos.
These are the signs to look out for. Now, in the last 60 seconds we have left, what can people do? Are we still advising people to buy gold, to buy silver? How should they, you know, prepare for it?
Well, the number one thing I would suggest to people is that they take at least a large portion of their savings and put it into being self-sufficient. If you can produce your own necessities, your own food, your own clean water, your own security, your own electricity, all of that, if you can start producing for yourself all these necessities and removing yourself from the grid, then you're good to go. If there's an economic crisis, you're much better off, because you're not reliant on anyone else for those necessities. Secondly, I would suggest, obviously, precious metals, gold and silver. Right now, I think there's a huge buying opportunity right now in gold and silver. The price has dropped off a little bit. That's not going to last. As soon as any hint of economic crisis strikes the mainstream, you're going to see people buying up precious metals left and right. So I'd suggest people buy those.
Brandon, it was great having you on. Folks, go to alt-market.com. I've just tweeted that out there again. Brandon, come back on again. That was really interesting. I appreciate your take on it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on the show.
Brandon Smith there, folks. alt-market.com. You heard him on Monday's edition of the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. We'll be back. No, in fact, we won't be. News is next. News is next. There you go. That was interesting. I enjoyed talking with him. It's exactly 3 minutes to the top of the hour on your Richie Allen Show, Europe's most listened to independent radio show. Thanks for listening. Stevie Wonder on Higher Ground. News is next. I'll be back in about 5 minutes' time. Sandra Fecht is coming up shortly.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. At least 9 people are injured and 1 suspect is dead after an attack at a university in the U.S. state of Ohio. Authorities say the attacker hit pedestrians with his vehicle, then exited the car and began stabbing bystanders with a large knife. The suspect was shot and killed by a campus police officer. The attack took place at Ohio State University, which has over 60,000 students. A motive for the attack is not yet known. The U.S. president-elect has threatened to undo the recent warming of diplomatic relations between the U.S. and Cuba. Just days after the death of former Cuban leader Fidel Castro, Donald Trump took to social media to put the future of the deal into doubt. Kevin McAleese reports from Washington.
Tweeting Monday, Trump wrote, "If Cuba is unwilling to make a better deal for the Cuban people, the Cuban-American people, and the U.S. as a whole, I will terminate deal." Donald Trump's latest online post plunged ties between the two nations into further uncertainty after the billionaire businessman repeatedly criticized the normalization of ties during his election campaign. Relations between the two were restored under President Obama following more than 5 decades of Cold War tensions. Speaking to Fox News over the weekend, Trump's chief of staff, Reince Priebus, said the future of a deal between Washington and Havana hinged on issues including human rights, open markets, freedom of religion, and political prisoners. Kevin McAleese, Washington.
South Africa's President Jacob Zuma is facing yet another vote of no confidence. Mr. Zuma has survived a similar vote before, but critics, including some of his ministers, want him out of office. Here's our Africa correspondent, Julius Mugambwa.
President Jacob Zuma's stay in office remains under scrutiny, with a renewed demand for him to resign. Reports indicate Zuma faces a vote of no confidence from his own party, the African National Congress, the ANC. According to some sections of South African media, critics pushing for Zuma's removal include senior officials of the party and some of his cabinet ministers. Some reports say that recent meetings have witnessed a divided ruling ANC over the matter. Analysts say that while the South African leader enjoys some strong support of the ANC's executive, recent revelations have shown growing dissatisfaction from within the party. Zuma's presidency is no stranger to criticism, especially from the opposition, who've in the past accused him of abuse of power and corruption.
For more on the day's top stories, you can follow us on Twitter at Feature Story. You can also check out our video reports on Facebook. We're there at facebook.com/featurestorynews. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Right, thanks, Rebecca Foster. It's approaching 3 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show for Monday, November 27th, 2016. My name is Richie Allen. Check out our broadcast partners, alternatecurrentradio.com, fabradiointernational.com in Manchester. Of course, davidicke.com, davidicke.com/headlines. An abundance, a treasure chest of vital information you will not hear or see anywhere in the mainstream media. Very serious stuff next. The system has roared. Those who claim that they have been abused in ritual satanic abuse situations are fantasists. Not only that, but those who have counseled them may be inadvertently eliciting fake memories from them. That's the system for you. More on that in a couple of minutes with Sandra Fecht. Don't miss it. Back after these.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works. networks from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back then. It is exactly 5 minutes past the hour. Thanks for all the tweets. Keep them coming in at Richie Allen Show, richie@richieallen.co.uk. Now, we went into great detail yesterday analysing a story that's made national headlines. That is the story of Dr. Rachel Hoskins, who has criticised the Wiltshire police because she says they are taking seriously claims of satanic ritual abuse and that they are taking seriously claims about former Prime Minister Edward Heath, despite the fact that the police said very clearly the complaints that Hoskins was making made up a very, very, very small section of their overall inquiry. She continued to say that it was fantasy when people said that they were victims of satanic abuse, and not only that, but therapists, psychologists, psychotherapists and psychiatrists were maybe either willingly or unwillingly or unknowingly eliciting fake memories from their patients. This is very, very serious. And victims are absolutely aghast, understandably. So who better to turn to than our next guest? Wonderful lady. She's a therapist based in Ontario in Canada. She's been on the programme a couple of times. We'll put her website details and her contact details on our Twitter feed very soon. Now, a couple of years ago, people began describing to her horrific scenarios where they were abused in these satanic rituals. It happened too often, and she had the courage to stand up and to come forward and speak about it. So who better to turn to than Sandra Fecht? And it's wonderful to have you back on the program, Sandra. And I do understand that we're joined tonight by Dave, who I believe is a patient of yours as well. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming back on.
Hi, Richie.
Hi, Dave.
Thanks, Richie. It's a pleasure to be here once again, and I'm really eager to deal with false memory syndrome.
Well, I'm delighted. And Dave, thanks very much for the courage and integrity you've shown in coming out to speak about this. It can't be easy. And I don't say that loosely. I really mean it. Thanks for doing it, Dave. Sandra, of course, I should have mentioned the workshops that you did here in the UK, which were a huge success, and we look forward to more of them in the future. Dave, you jump in any time you want. I want to ask Sandra first of all, though, how have you read what's been going on with people like Rachel Hoskins coming out saying it's fantasy, the therapists are to blame, even though the police have clearly said, no, you're wrong, it's much, much bigger than that? What have you made of all of this, Sandra, in the last few days?
Well, first of all, my hat's off to the Wiltshire Police Force for pursuing this, because I know many police forces have been compromised. So I would like to say that. I think that some people who are well-meaning just don't know about this, and they are not educated enough in this area. There are, you know, good people who are judges and doctors and therapists and so on, who have no idea about it. And because the whole idea of satanic ritual abuse is such a paradigm shift for all of us, it is easier to go into our denial than do the really hard work of digging to find out where the truth is, and having the courage to stand up to colleagues and so on in order to face it. And Dave, I don't know if you've got anything to say at this point or.
Well, I guess I would say one thing, that the Old Testament refers to human and animal sacrifice, the drinking of blood, the casting of spells, oaths, and curses, following the false gods, sex with children, sodomy. All these things are part and parcel of Satanism, and it's been with us since the beginning of time. The difference is now is they have to go underground, which is why there's cults and secret societies.
I think also, if I can continue along this theme, Richie, that back in the day when sexual abuse was going through the same trials as satanic abuse is right now, Mr. Freyd and Dr. Underwager started the False Memory Group, and I'm sure that you know the history, but for the sake of some listeners who may not be familiar with it, I want to go into it a little bit. Now, Mr. Freyd and Dr. Underwager started this group, the False Memory Syndrome Group. And there may be people of good heart and good intention who are continuing the work. However, for those who don't know the history, Mr. Freyd's daughter, Pamela.
Yes.
Pamela Freyd.
Dr. Pamela Freyd.
Yeah, she's a professor, actually, so it's Professor Pamela Freyd. Started having spontaneous memories of abuse by her father, Mr. Freyd, and went to confront him privately. And he was enraged that she would even deign to make such an accusation. And so he is alleged to have started this false memory. And he hired Dr. Underwager as one of the people who was a founding member. And later it came out that Mr. Underwager was a pedophile, and he was asked to leave the organization. But these are the two fine fellows who began this organization. And, you know, apparently I've read accounts of the origins of this false memory syndrome. And one of the relatives of Mr. Freyd said in an article that is quoted, what's that Toronto Star article?
Google false memory label, Michelle Landsberg, Toronto Star, and it comes up.
And what he was saying, one of the relatives was saying, is that, you know, Mr. Freyd made his teenage daughters walk around naked, and he was an alcoholic. And, you know, it seems possible to me, therefore, that he had molested his, at least his daughter Jennifer, and probably the others. So this whole false memory thing got off on a very dubious foot. There may be good people who are supporting it and trying to find the truth, but there are two mistakes that we can make here. We can not find it when it is there, and we can find it when it isn't there. And the finding it when it isn't there is the bigger of two evils, because that situation, we have, just like with sexual abuse in the past, we had so many people who were sexually abused and we were never finding it and lives were being ruined. And now we're not finding this in spite of the overwhelming evidence from all over the world. And we need to smarten up and find it, because, you know, there we can make errors of commission and errors of omission. And at this point, the error of omission is far larger. And Dave, your family was an example of that.
Yeah, I was born into a family who both parents adhered to the methods and practices of traditions of Satanism. And because I refused to become part of their cult as a very little boy, like they put you through rituals and tests to try and take you to the dark side. And because I defied them and rejected what they put before me, I was subjected to satanic events for 50 years. And during my adult life, I was drugged many times per year at family occasions, Christmas, Thanksgiving, Mother's Day, Father's Day, that types of things. And there was others they coerced to help them in their actions against me. They wanted revenge for my refusal to become like them.
I want to
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Richard. No, this is incredible stuff. I just want to remind our listeners, Sandra Fecht is on the line. Go to sandrafecht.com. I'm going to tweet that out there now. And Dave has been counselled by Sandra, and he's a survivor of ritual satanic abuse. Dave, I want to ask you, in a minute, I want you to tell me how you feel when these experiences you had are described as fantasy and are described as a moral panic. And I want to, before you talk about that, I just want to draw attention. We have a lot of listeners in the United States, and I've just been made aware by a listener called Jane who says that she's listening in DC. And she says, Richie, you should check out a program made by Geraldo Rivera back in the late 1980s. He allegedly made a show in which, and apparently it was a very well-researched show, and it wasn't sensational. It was very matter-of-fact, where they claimed in the late 80s that there may have been a million Satanists in the United States alone in that country. Thanks to Jane for sending me that email. That's a massive number, that, isn't it? And well, Sandra, yeah, I want to get your opinion on that number before we talk about Dave's feelings on what's happening now, this attempt to completely diminish the experiences people have had and write them off as fantasy. That 1 million out of 260, 270 million people in the US, what do you think, Sandra? It is a massive number, right?
Well, I think that number is way too low.
You think it's low? Right.
Oh, absolutely. I remember thinking about 1 in 3 people has probably had this experience or been involved somehow with satanic ritual abuse. And I remember talking to a First Nations woman who was a therapist in the American Midwest. And she looked at me, and in that grounded native way, she said, your numbers are way too low.
Wow.
And if you Google Ted Gunderson, the former head of the LA FBI, then what you find is that his numbers, and he is one of those real, you know, cross the T's and dot the I's kind of person, as you can imagine, the head of the FBI for Los Angeles would have to be. His numbers were that there were about 4 million back then in the early 2000s. So 4 million, you know, who are practicing Satanists. And what about all the spin-off groups who do these things, but they don't really know why? Because there are those who really know what they're doing, know the power of these rituals, know how to manifest things through these rituals, you know. And then there are the people who just go through the actions and they don't know what they're doing. So there are millions of people involved. The problem is that we have been so turned away from anything spiritual that most of us cannot even begin to conceive that this stuff is going on or that spirit has that much power. And of course, the Bible says that we fight not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and evil in high places. And the biggest trick of Satan is to make you think he's not there, you know. And when we talk about false memory, if we get back to that, I mean, this whole idea that therapists put the ideas into people's heads, first of all, most victims are very poor people, not all of them, but most of them. And I personally have done therapy for years for free with people who needed it, but could not afford it. And, you know, the perpetrators are the ones that have the money. And this false memory is protecting the perpetrators and hiding the truth. And anyone who is a truth seeker would have to ask, why would they do that? Who benefits? I was watching something from that Hampstead case, and I'm not well versed in that. I thought I'd do a little bit of...
Yeah, me neither, to be honest. Yeah.
YouTubing on it. But the when I watched the interviewer interviewing the father of the children, you know, the interview was done in such a way that it assumed the guilt of the mother. Like, they had convicted and tried her before she even got a chance. If children start talking about this stuff, where on earth do they get the idea? I don't know if it was from the mother's boyfriend, the father. I don't know. What I know is someone got to those children.
Yeah, and they've been abused. You know, they've been abused one way or the other, haven't they? I mean, that's important to remember as well. Sandra, I've got a... It's not that I'm playing the devil's advocate. I want to ask you, you're a very well regarded, and I know you're very well regarded because after the first time you came on the program, and then you got a very favourable mention in David's book, Phantom mm-hmm. Self. People who know you, where you live, were in touch with us to say, you know, you're a fantastic woman. You're a very, very good therapist, very, very caring woman, and very, you know, a very important woman to have around, especially around these issues. Is it the case that it's easier for people to believe that these memories have been planted by a rogue therapist for sensational reasons? Or, I mean, because that's what I get. You know, we talk about the sense of the possible. People just can't believe this stuff is going on. But can you be honest and tell us, is it possible for a trained clinician, a trained therapist, a trained psychoanalyst, can it be done? Can false memories be given to a patient who is vulnerable? Can that happen?
Well, I think that's a really great question. And firstly, I need to say I have to be referred to as a counselor until I get that registration thing that is now a new law coming in March of next year for those of us who are practicing in Ontario. Yes, I think it is possible. The thing is that if somebody is a therapist, a counselor, a hypnotherapist is of good intention and knows what they're doing, it's not as likely to be a mistake they'd make as the mistake of missing it because they don't know what they're doing or what they're listening to. And I think that I've had cases myself where someone has told me, oh, so-and-so, you know, you're going through a regression with somebody, and they will say, oh, you know, I'm being hurt in whatever way or this or that is happening. And I'm saying, well, okay, who's hurting you? Because you always have to build the question off the last thing the person says so that, you know, they're leading, not you. And, you know, they'll say, oh, my father or whoever, only to find out that they had been hypnotically trained, you know, with a post-hypnotic suggestion to accuse the father, to put the father in a bad light. You have to work through that. You have to be ready for that as a therapist, as a counselor. So do I think it's possible? Yes. I think the other thing is that in almost every occupation in the world, it's been infiltrated by the wrong kind of person, by the kind of person who would do evil, you know, who are part of this, because there are doctors, lawyers, judges, teachers, housewives, you know, businessmen who are all part of this. And you can't tell by looking. I remember one time having a client who came back to me, like this client made the conscious decision to go into that world, to be a slave in the S&M thing.
Right.
And, she came sauntering into my office one day and said, Sandra, I know that I have to tell you this. There is something you need to know. And I said, what is it? She said, well, there are all these clubs in this town that she was from, and you had to know someone to get in. And she talked about the horrors that they were doing behind the locked secret doors. And I said, and she said, everybody's there. The doctors are there. The lawyers are there. The teachers are there. The ministers are there. Everyone is part of this club.
Anybody with any bit of status or a bit of power in the area, anybody highly regarded, was at the club, right?
Yeah, police officers and people who have lesser status as well. It's not just the rich or just the poor. I mean, they're pretty open. And I said, well, how do I get in there and where is it? And she looked at me and in all seriousness, she used that line. She said, Sandra, if I told you, they would kill us both.
If she told you, they would kill us both. Now, on that point, I want to bring Dave back in. Mm-hmm. Dave, when you look back on what happened to you, how were your family able to participate in these horrific things without drawing the attention of the wider neighbourhood? Because we're going to have sceptical listeners and they'll be thinking, how could they carry on as normal and conceal all of this? How do they do it, Dave?
Well, there's very many people involved, for one thing. So they don't, you know, back when I was a boy, like I'm 62, they didn't have to be overly secretive. Like the cult operated out of the basement of a church. And, you know, there was, well, to give you an example, like I have been to the police about my own case because my family and I endured this, me for 53 years. And, you know, there's a conspiracy of silence in the government of Ontario, of Canada, North America. The Western world tries to hide this. In Ontario alone, in the 90s, there was two big events. One was a huge conference on satanic ritual abuse that was held, and, you know, people, top law enforcement people went, medical people went, government people went, and people went to that conference from the U.S. of A. also. So that was held in the mid-1990s. During the same period of time, somewhere in the mid-90s, there was a case where over 200 children were subject to pedophilia and satanic ritual abuse in Eastern Ontario. It was written about in the Toronto Star, but they elected to not put the satanic stuff in there, thinking it was too risque for their readers. But of course, what they really did was just made it so a whole generation of people didn't know that they should be protecting their children in a different way.
Wow.
So when I gave my statement to the police and talked to a detective who was fairly young, he was probably still going to school in the mid-1990s or college. He told me at one point in time, I don't believe in Satanism and I don't believe in cults. And I'm thinking, how can that possibly be? Because in the mid-90s, there was these two huge events, which goes to tell you that the government hid it and so did the training facilities for the law enforcement people. Because with those two large events that happened, that should have changed laws in Ontario. It should have changed how we train medical people, social workers, doctors, law enforcement people, but none of that happened. So here, only a few, 20 years later, he's never even heard of cults or secret societies or cults.
He's never heard of it. Just before Sandra comes back in, I know Sandra's got loads to say on this. Dave, I can be a bit slow sometimes, you'll forgive me. Did you just say to me a couple of minutes ago that a satanic ritual abuse conference was held, which to the untrained eye might seem like something harmless, where professionals come to talk about this horrible thing, but in reality, it was actually people practicing satanic abuse?
No, it was people that...
Right, I'm glad I got that right. Okay, right.
35 or so people in a city in Ontario called Thunder Bay complained about being satanically, ritually abused. Right. And so that... through that, they ended up having this fairly large conference. And you can Google that conference. It's Thunder Bay Conference on Ritual Abuse.
And just before Sandra comes back in to talk about, again, the attempts to completely ridicule this, Dave, we've had Fiona Barnett on the program. We've had Jay Parker on the program. We've had people from other parts of the world. Sandra's patients, including yourself, have told her about these things, all independent of one another. You know, Dave, don't you, that there are people listening to this tonight that will not believe that professional men and women are party to the torture and sometimes murder of children. They just won't believe it. Do you feel that, and you probably don't, that it's incumbent on you to try and persuade them that it's going on? Or are you like, well, we put our stories out there and it's up to them whether they believe it or not? You know what I'm getting at? How do you persuade somebody this is going on? Because it is beyond the pale for most people.
Well, it's hard to persuade people in something that's outside the parameters of their belief system. But I've basically devoting my life to make known the prevalence of cults and secret societies so people can protect themselves and their children and be aware they need to be careful.
Sandra, come in on that. I mean... again, you and I've spoken four times. We're at the juncture now. Every time, I've got emails coming in from people. They're not saying that Dave is a liar. They're not saying they don't believe you at all. They're saying they just can't get over the idea. Professional men and women, carers, Doctors, as you said, Sandra, it should go against everything a doctor believes in. Would participate in horrific games, hunting parties, murdering children.
Mm-hmm. I know. It goes against everything you believe in. But I had a meeting with a psychiatrist from the States recently who was cult-raised and was telling me that they were forced to become a doctor so that the cult would have a way of bumping off people that they didn't really want, or doing that this person would work for them in the hospitals and so on. I mean, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And it's true. You know, I mean, but all you have to do is take a look at our cancer for money system. And people are being sacrificed every day. You know, we can't say that the whole system is working in our favor. I mean, I'm sure every single listener out there knows somebody who has died unnecessarily of cancer. It's a for-profit medical system. And there are practitioners out there who will do things for profit and have been trained in order to serve the needs of the larger, the ruling bodies of Satanism. I think that everybody has to find their own convincers. And there are many, many ways to find your convincers. For me, if there's research on it, and if you Google research on satanic ritual abuse, Dr. Ellen Lacter out of Berkeley is doing a longitudinal study to prove it's there. And you can find all kinds of references that prove it's there. For me, it's if there's scientific research, if it's mentioned in the Bible, if it's part of my experience, if I've heard it many times from my clients, and there's one other. I'm losing my fifth convincer, but if it's in other cultures, that's right.
In other cultures.
I can just finish this one.
Sorry, go ahead, Sandra. Then I've got a really interesting email from Allison. Go ahead.
Okay. That for me, one of the big convincers is that, well, one, the police, all my police reports disappeared. You know, when I started complaining about, like, I was threatened, my life was threatened, which is why a lot of therapists and counselors back off from this. And when I submitted three police reports, they all disappeared. And that was a real convincer for me. Each person has to find what convinces them, but don't sit back and not put the effort into researching this and then say, oh, I don't believe that. There is way too much at stake here. One of the big convincers for me is that people get better when we go through this stuff and they lose the fear and they lose the shame and all of the other, and they get themselves back. People get better. I came at this through therapy. David Icke came at it through journalism. Ted Gunderson came at it through the investigations and the FBI stuff. Like, there are too many people out there coming across this. So please do your research before you start knocking it.
Absolutely right. So many tweets coming in. I'm going to read a few of them and then a very interesting email from Allison. Daniel tweets, when Britney Spears went in inverted commas crazy and shaved her head some years back, that was her programming breaking down. Now, Brian has sent an email saying, Richie, what about ritual satanic imagery in rock and pop music? We've never seen so much of it in recent years. That's important. Sandra might comment on that in a minute. Dave will have something to say on that, I have no doubt, as well. Martin asks, do your guests think that people are unknowingly worshipping something other than good when they pray at church? I tell you what, that's a brilliant question. Before I read more tweets, let's get into that. Are we unknowingly worshipping something evil when we're at these churches that we go to on Sundays?
Well, I think it depends upon the church you go to. The church I went to as a little boy was dark, but there was good people in that church who didn't know what was going on in the basement of that church. And I can answer that question as well. I'd just like to point out that if you have love in your heart, you can't comprehend these things. And that's the biggest problem of people getting their head around it. Because the people we're talking about in their heart is full of hate. And so they look the same as us on the outside, and they might be very polished and smooth, and they might be running charities and working with children's organizations. But if they have hate in their heart, you will never know that. Yeah. And so we can't comprehend what they do. And that was one of my biggest hurdles when I first discovered this, was to accept that people could actually do what was done to me like their own child. And so when people hear about this, they have to, first of all, realize that the people that do that have hate inside them and not love.
Yeah, that's a brilliant way of looking at it. If you have a child and you love your child and you're in a loving, stable relationship, it's even more difficult to imagine this. Simon tweets that Dave needs his own interview. His story sounds amazing, intriguing, terrifying, and terrific. Dave can come on anytime he wants. Lone Horse tweets, it's hard to believe. I've looked at so many other explanations, but none of them add up. So it sounds like Lone Horse has basically come to accept it. Luga tweets, where the F do they hunt then? Basically, these people are well-educated, clever, organized, not simple nutters. Disney Channel has been mentioned a few times by people for satanic imagery as well. And I want to read this. So many tweets coming in. Another 50 have just come in onto our Twitter feed right there. This from Alison, Sandra. I had lots of therapy as a teen due to an eating disorder. They pushed to get me to say I had been abused by my father. They didn't say it explicitly, but the implication was there. At one point, I began to wonder if I had been. No, I wasn't. I just wanted to be, you know, to mention this. The point is, I did start to doubt myself briefly. Now, that's an email just come in from Alison. She doesn't give any opinion on what she's heard tonight, but she said when she was being counselled for an eating disorder, therapists were pushing her towards, oh, you must have been abused. What do you think, Sandra? What do you think of that?
I think that new therapists often try to, like, it's sort of like, oh, I found one, you know, and yeah. I think it is possible for that to happen. I'm sorry that it happens to anybody, and I'm particularly sorry at this moment for Allison's experience. Statistically, 80% of people with an eating disorder have been sexually abused. So, you know, the odds are, but there's always that 20%, you know. So I think that those mistakes can happen from time to time, but they are far fewer than the error of omission, and that is not finding it. You were talking, if that answers that one, Richie, and then you were talking earlier about Satanism in the media, and it is there and present in huge ways and small ways. I mean, the Mark Devlin's book on Satanism in the music industry and the whole 432 versus 440 hertz, and any musicians listening, if you don't know that, please tune to 432 hertz, which brings clarity to the mind, peace to the feelings, health to the body, harmony between people, is consistent mathematically with both the universe and the Planck constant at which you have communication with all conscious beings. And I've actually been at that level, and it's amazing. As opposed to 440 hertz, which is German tuning, now called standard tuning, which kind of horrifies me, so I continue.
So you avoid it. I must mention Gareth Ike, David's son, and a brilliant singer-songwriter. His latest album, 3, was recorded in 432, as he described. I'm not going to lie and say that I feel a difference. I probably am without knowing it. It's a wonderful album. Beautiful music on it. I'll finish off the show with a song from it a bit later. But that's a really interesting point you're bringing up. Look, Sandra, to us, what I can see is you have the Historic Child Sex Abuse Inquiry in this country, and it is being run into the ground. It is a national disgrace that we've had four at the latest count, the current one being Professor Alexis Jay, who's the latest woman to take it over. We've had lawyers leave it recently. Michael Mansfield came on this programme to say absolutely categorically that there are very powerful forces working behind the scenes or in the shadows to stop the historic inquiry gaining any traction and finding out what it needs to find out. We know that Ted Heath, because we've heard David wrote about it in 1998 in The Biggest Secret, about people being murdered, children being murdered on the boat, thrown overboard, Haute de la Garenne, Jimmy Savile providing buys. It's a known fact that this stuff was going on, and yet they keep trying to derail it, they keep trying to ridicule it, say that people like Dave, he's a fantasist, or he's a lawyer, you're an idiot, Sandra, you're eliciting these fake memories. Are they going to succeed? Or has the lid come off this, do you think, now, Sandra, where there's no going back?
I think the lid's coming off. I mean, I watched it happen with sexual abuse right here in my own community, where I was ridiculed and marginalized and so on for suggesting that people in this community were sexually abused. Well, lo and behold, everybody who ridiculed and marginalized me, they're all, you know, doing the sexual abuse treatment now. And the same will happen with this. I mean, the truth will out. And it's just a question of that tipping factor where enough people have put enough effort into it. Enough. I think Dave made that excellent point that when you have feelings, you can't imagine a psychopath who walks around without feelings, let alone having hate in their heart. They have nothing. And it's trained out of them. And that's what Dave's family tried to do to Dave. Like, good families raise good children. They reward good behavior and consequence bad behavior. In these families, all kinds of pain and suffering are inflicted on the baby, and all kinds of treatments are given to the baby in order to kill their feelings, so that you basically have a roboticized being who will do whatever you want. And I just want to back up for a minute, Richie. You asked how they, you know, how they weren't discovered. How did this go on so blatantly, just like sexual abuse did, and nobody reported it? And first of all, there's a huge culture of fear. So everybody's afraid to find the truth or to be part of finding the truth. I met a homeopath in the States, and I was talking to her about this, and I said, you know, what was going on? And she said, oh, yeah, I know all about that. I found the remedies to help the souls get back in the body and blah, blah. And I said, that's amazing. I'm friends with a homeopath in Canada. Could you tell me those remedies? And she said, not a hope. And I said, why not? Why would you not, as a healer, want to share that? And she said, the men in black have worked me over once. She said, it's not going to happen twice. And so she was, you know, terrified into silence. The other thing is they do terrible things to children where they make the child feel complicit in the action. And so the child, if they tell, the adults tell the child, well, we will tell them it was your fault because you made that choice.
And you'll be punished.
Exactly. Yeah. And look at the media. I mean, everything in the media is guiding us away from decency and love and caring and cooperation and helpfulness and truth and honesty. I mean, even in the commercials, just those split second commercials, there are these tiny little things that lead us in the wrong direction. I'm really noticing lately in commercials how there are satanic symbols and things like a child coming in and the parent greeting them and saying hi, and the child is like, ugh, and ignoring the parent and walking right past them. I mean, that alienation between generations, that mistrust of the parents, you know. And then that book that Ted Gunderson recommends, Pawns in the Game. And one of the plans for taking over the world by the Rothschild back in the 1700s was that they would alienate the youth from the parents and corrupt the youth.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what's happening. I mean, they're following that manifesto to the letter. Take control of the media, corrupt the youth. That's what they're doing.
Dave, you know, I would have, a few years ago, I would have found it very hard to listen to any of this. And somebody said to me in on the Isle of Wight, actually, a few months ago when David began the speaking tour that he's in the middle of, the Worldwide Wake Up Tour. And I met a teacher afterwards who said that he came to see the event reluctantly. And afterwards he said, there's no denying it, what David was talking about. And he said to me, one of the things that persuaded him to come and see this 12-hour presentation was when we learned that the Prime Minister took part in rituals where he inserted a part of his anatomy, we know which part, into the mouth of a dead pig, but also learning that his friend George Osborne, the former Chancellor, the man in charge of the money, that he took part in rituals, and a dominatrix told us this on this programme, he took part in rituals where small birds were inserted into the rectums of men until the birds expired, while people jeered and chanted and laughed. And the teacher was saying, this was what convinced me that these people are absolutely sick beyond the pale, because he said, however pissed I might get on Guinness or on vodka, however much I might get a bit silly with a bunch of guys, you don't do stuff like that unless there's something very wrong with you. And I thought to myself, yeah, yeah, who does that sort of stuff? And how can you not make the leap from that into something else? You know, something even more grotesque. You know, the torture and the injuring of small children. I think it's right in front of our eyes, Dave, isn't it? The satanic symbology that we see every day in music.
Well, the symbology's right there. But if you read the newspaper and read between the lines, there's examples of it in the paper every day.
Every day.
And then you read about some guy that's abusing children and bestiality going on. Where do you think that came from? Where do you think he learned to act that way? Or why is he acting out in that way? It's because he was likely subjected to it as a little boy.
Both of you must be absolutely, first of all, horrified, because you're human and you have love and you have compassion, both of you. I know Sandra from speaking to her a few times, the first time I've met you, Dave. So you'll have compassion to learn of all these footballers who are coming out now to say that they were abused. And we're learning today that it might be the tip of the iceberg. Many more footballers are going to talk about themselves being abused. And we mentioned yesterday on the programme, and look, we're not clairvoyants in any way, it just stood to reason, that if any of these football coaches were part of wider paedophile ring, Sandra, that if they knew more about what was going on, rather than if they were just lone operators who were perverts and abusing children, that something might happen to them. It's very interesting that we learned today that Barry Bunnell, or Burnell, if I got that name right there, one of the guys who has been convicted three times of abusing children over the years, he's suddenly mysteriously taken very sick. Barry Bunnell, in fact, is his name. He's just been taken to hospital. How have you read that story, Sandra?
No, I don't know that story.
Dozens of professional footballers are coming forward now to say that they were abused when they were budding young apprentice footballers, when they were much younger. And the BBC announced today that, now the BBC didn't use Jimmy Savile's name, but we're saying this might be Savile-esque in terms of, we expect dozens and dozens and dozens of professional footballers to come out now and say, we were abused when we were younger. And one of the chief protagonists, a guy called Barry Bunnell, one of the chief abusers, he's suddenly been taken very ill and taken to hospital, right? So here we are again, another massive story about to break with paedophilia, which leads you to wonder, Sandra, when will people accept that it's an endemic thing, that it's endemic, it's rooted in society?
Well, I'm not sure when that date will be. There needs to be a tipping point where enough, you know, it's the 100th monkey thing, when enough people are doing something, there's a flashpoint. But I do want to back up again for a minute, Richie. I should have a rearview mirror here, but anyway, that I am so proud of any of those real sort of He-Man types, the football players and so on, who come forward and have the courage to be that vulnerable publicly, you know, in a public persona, and say, this happened to me, because it helps everyone else. It helps everyone. And what do you stand for? What do you stand for? So I like to me, the real men, the brave men, are the men of vulnerability and courage enough to be emotionally courageous and come for and socially courageous and come forward with this, because believe me, this at this point is not a territory for the, you know, the lily livered. This, the people who are coming forward right now, they're the brave ones. And thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, it's a big story, this. Just before we go, this football story is a big story. Just before we go, I know Dave will have something to say on this. One of the Richie Allen Show team, or a very small team, Jean Ann, says, you know, the Podesta brothers. Now, that rang a bell with me, because Dave said a few minutes ago, didn't he? Didn't you, Dave, that they didn't have to work so hard to hide it in the community. They could be, you know, reasonably safe in carrying on with their satanic rituals. Isn't it incredible that Tony Podesta, Washington power broker and brother of John Podesta, he had images on the walls of his house of naked teenagers? And this was reported by the Washington Post 11 years ago. It's, again, it's hiding in plain sight, Dave.
Yes, it is.
It's simple as that's right there for people.
There's that movie, Eyes Wide Shut, you know, which I think kind of describes most people. They're looking right at it and they don't see it. And what Dave was saying earlier about it's in the paper every day and we get one on one, but we don't make two. You know, like we've had stories in Canada about people attacking strangers on buses and hacking them to pieces and, you know, dining out on that, if you know what I'm saying. Or, you know, that case in Montreal where the man killed the Chinese student. And just, I mean, how awful to do such horrible things to a body, chop it up and mail it and do all those crazy things. Those people are prime candidates for as having been satanically ritually abused. But we look at it and we don't know how to add it up. Honestly, please, if you have any doubts, start researching. You will find an overwhelming amount of research historically, interculturally, and personal stories that attest to all of this.
And there's a concerted effort to hide it. I've written hundreds of letters to perpetrators who perpetrated against me, telling them I knew what they did to me and telling them that I was going to seek justice on it. I wrote the premier, I write law enforcement agencies, I write the media. Nobody in the media never even responds to a well-written letter in Ontario that I've written. And actually a friend of mine wrote a letter to the same guy, the same reporter I had written multitudinous letters to, and said she had something she'd like to talk to him about. And the guy emailed her back that within the hour. And once she told him what it was about, he just hung up the phone and didn't reply, because there's a conspiracy of silence at the very top and it comes all the way down. So anyone that tries to come forth usually gets trampled on, embarrassed and humiliated.
There's enough people with courage coming out now, Dave. Sandra, that's about all we have time for this particular program. Thanks for coming on with short notice to address what Rachel Hoskins has been saying about fake memories. It's hugely important. Folks, go to sandraeffect.com. That's Sandra's website. And thanks to you, Dave, for having the courage to talk about it and to carry on telling people about what happened to you and why people need to pay attention to it. No doubt we'll be hearing from you again, both of you. Sandra, thanks so much.
Thanks. Good luck, Richie. Thanks for the great work you're doing.
I do nothing. Don't ever say that. It's people like you. All I do is chat with you. I've the easy job. You put your life on the line and others like you. Thanks for doing it. I really mean that. And you have an open door to this program anytime you want.
My pleasure.
Thanks Sandra and Dave. Sandra Fecht, the therapist, and Dave, who's been counselled by Sandra in recent times about these disgusting things that are going on. And you know, David uses the term dot connecting, which Sandra was alluding to earlier on. It's incredible. She talked about some of these ritualistic murders, seemingly random, nutter, murders a guy, chops his body up and mails them, you know, to places, or draws images or writes things and all random stuff. That, what a nutter. And it isn't random. You know, it isn't random. If you connect the dots, if you look elsewhere in the media, you see something else has happened over here and something else has happened over there. It's exactly 5 minutes to the top of the hour. A very quick break. Back to wrap up. Don't go anywhere.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk. Now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Right, welcome back. That's pretty much more or less all we have time for. Thanks for listening to the programme tonight. Thanks to Brandon Smith earlier on. Really enjoyed speaking with Brandon. In fact, that was a fascinating chat, that. If you missed it, the podcast will be online very soon. The programme will begin repeating in, well, around about an hour's time. It'll be on a loop on davidicke.com and the other players until we come back on air tomorrow. And also, huge thanks to Dave and to Sandra Fecht as well for the work they're doing. Follow this one closely as the historic child abuse inquiry collapses in front of our eyes, as doctors in inverted commas come out and say the memories are fake and the police shouldn't be. I mean, how dare, I said this on Sunday View yesterday, I'd love the Wiltshire police to knock on Dr. Rachel Hoskins' door and say, excuse me, Dr. Hoskins, we'd love to have a word with you about perverting the course of justice. We'd love to have a word with you about intimidating, whether you mean to or not. And she probably doesn't, maybe, you know, but you might be putting victims off by talking like this, and maybe that's, you know, half the battle or half the plan as well. Thanks for all the tweets that came in there. To see what people said on Twitter, go to twitter.com, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, in there, and you'll see what other people have said. Coming up in a couple of minutes' time, brand new healing meditation from our own Kim Hutchison at livingasyoursoul.com. Don't miss that. Stay tuned for it. And I'm going to love you and leave you with this from Gareth Ike. This is a absolutely brilliant song, and it's called Jura. It's my favourite song from his new album, 3. Go to garethike.com or davidicke.com to find out more about that. I'll see you tomorrow at 8 p.m. GMT. Thanks to my producer, Claire, to Simon and to Aaron and to Jean Ann in Ballyoughclea there in Ireland. I've been Richie Allen. Back tomorrow at 8. Bye now.